ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
And good day, good night. Welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, August 13th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by my soccer partner in crime, Dwayne Mullins. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I don't know if I'm crime, so you never know with me. It's a nice sunny day here. Soccer crime. We'll had a Premier League weekend. I watched four full games, Kevin. I have watched two championship games as well, and the highlights of all of them, I'm ready to go.
I actually have watched a championship game, too. I did. Yeah. I was seeing Leeds win this weekend. Well, last weekend. But that's the thing. The Zone has a championship too. So I wish it'd be sponsored by them, because I guess we'll stop talking about them until they give us money after this. But of course, this is not on the show. And today, it's Tuesday. Tuesdays are for Europe. This is this season when Dwayne and I will talk about European topics, not necessarily a weekend review proper like we do for Major League Soccer, because we'll never be done just saying scores and numbers, and that's not necessarily compelling on an audio, I understand. But we're going to talk about some topics, and today, of course, we have three usually main topics we'll talk about on Tuesdays, in Tuesdays Are for Europe. Today we have three, but this one is not in the three, but I think it's important to touch a bit on the Zone. It was your experience this weekend, mine. Of course, I always say a disclosure here. I have the highest internet speed that you can have in the island of Montreal. So for me, there's no bandwidth problem. There's no streaming problem. The Zone goes well. And it's crisp, clear HD. And it was enjoyable to have a lot of games to watch this weekend. But how about you?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I like about DAZN and any over-the-top service is the on-demand feature. You know, this goes stocks back. I remember when I first discovered a PVR back in the day and how exciting that was, that you could just set it and it would tape things. So, you know, that seems like antiquated now when we think back on it, but it really did change how we watched a lot of stuff.
That's
and sports
true.
Is still sports is still a little bit different. You prefer to watch them live, but the beauty of us being, there's not a lot of advantages to being in a non-soccer culture when you're a soccer fan. I mean, it's getting better here, but it's still not the primary sport. But the one advantage is you can avoid scores a little bit more easily. So particularly if they're like a smaller team. So for instance, I watched the Wolves game.
Well, Leicester, Leicester Wolves.
The Wolves-Leicester game after the fact, because Wolves and Leicester, there are fans in North America, but they're not prominent. So I was able to avoid that score and watch it as if live. Obviously, watched the Liverpool game live, the season capper, the City game live, and then I watched Chelsea United live as well, and then I watched Arsenal, Newcastle on tape delay. Yeah. I did know the results of that one when I watched it, but I watched the entire 90 of that one as well, because I'm I'm a trooper that way. There you go.
You know, I used to wear a jersey. I used to wear my Chelsea jersey sometimes on game day. I stopped doing that. You know why? Because on your way back home, if you use the public transport, public transit, sometimes, which had happened a few times, if you don't know the score, you just finish working or whatever life activity you're doing, and you're on your way home to watch the game, you were able to turn your phone off, not get any spoilers, and then you just walk into the metro, you pay your fare, the guy looks at you, oh, great game by Chelsea, they won such a great game, and I look at him like, you mother, yeah. So I don't wear a jersey on game day now for that reason. I truly understand. But it'll be interesting to continue to keep an eye on the Zone. I didn't like the one thing, what did they call it? Like the NFL Red Zone, but for the Premier League. The Goal Rush, EPL Goal Rush,
I believe.
You follow one game. This one was the Crystal Palace game, the 10:30 game. And then as soon as there's other goals, they switch and forth. But it's kind of interesting. And it's kind of interesting, too, to hear the commentaries, audio commentary, either of the play-by-play, but usually it's the color reacting to VAR. That was my highlight of the weekend. You were talking about the Leicester Wolves game. Let's start with this game, Dwayne. So, of course, there was a goal that was called back, a goal that Wolves would have scored that was called back. And in the box, the ball is headed by the one Wolves player. It bounces off the arm and then the head of another Wolves player. So it was called back. But what was interesting to me was the color commentators like, really? Really? All right. Ah. The disdain in the voice of that commentator, or the disdain in the voice of the pundits, you know? Yeah, it's going to be a transition, to say the least, for the Premier League and VAR.
Yeah, well, you didn't make a mistake when you said it. There was a goal called off. That was a goal.
Exactly.
Period. End of story. I don't, clear and obvious? Forget about that. That doesn't exist anymore. The rules have been changed, and this is actually when the Premier League announced they were going to bring VAR in. A lot of people said, but look at these decisions, and they pointed to stuff like this, where it's like that ball, if it touched his arm, and it wasn't entirely obvious to me that it did on the replay, but if it did, it was the shoulder, basically. Like, it was like a half inch down the shoulder. Like, that, cut your arms off then, right? Like, come on, man. There comes a point where you have to have some common sense out there. But this is, anyway, it's not a clear and obvious error. And the Premier League said that they were going to allow their referees to be a little bit more interpretive there.
Yeah. The threshold, the clear terminology they've used is a high threshold of clear and obvious error, which we have seen throughout. And that's where I want to preface it with this here, Dwayne, is I did notice a difference with our English referees, and even the fourth referee in the booth, well, the fifth referee in the booth, even his threshold of do outside of that Leicester Wolves one, and there was a penalty retake in City, but mostly for the few times we've seen VAR in the first weekend, mostly the threshold was high, and mostly the calls were stand, if you want to use the NFL terminology. So I was impressed by that. But then there is that example that we're talking about, the Leicester versus Wolves ones, which gets the narrative and gets the headlines.
The change in the rules, which, of course, these are the first weekend under the new rules in the Premier League, which are tweaks to the rules, not necessarily the new rules outright, but they state that any ball that hits the hand cannot result in a goal. It used to be that if your hand was in a natural position, you did not make a play for the ball, you could score directly off your hand into the goal. So they wanted to eliminate that. But what they've done is they've globalized that. So any play that hits a hand in the box to an attacker and results in a goal directly from that, in this case, it hit, let's assume it hit his hand. We won't get into that argument here. Went down to his foot, and then he scored off his foot. It was waved off because it came directly off the arm. So that's where the rule change is in effect. And what's interesting about this, Kevin, is you're right in terms of the other side of things. They are being more conservative or liberal, depending on your perspective, in terms of their interpretation on the other side of the pitch. So the defender, if it hits his hand like that, I guarantee you they would not have called a penalty. So basically they are doubling down and making the advantage to the defenders here, which I'm not sure, this is an entertainment product, that necessarily makes any bloody sense. Because if that had hit, again, if that ball had gone off the head, that bang, bang, bang like that in a half second and hit a defender's arm, and there's a VAR review, there's no way they're giving that as a penalty. But because they have this absolute 100%, can't argue with it, it has to be black and white sort of interpretation on a goal, it's wiped out. So there's a double standard at play here. Look, this is what I hate about VAR, is that all of this stuff, why are we talking about this? This is ridiculous. Let the referees officiate the games. And if you're going to have, at least if you're going to have this technology invading the game, which it clearly is, because God help us, if someone was a millimeter offside, you wouldn't want to miss that.
Yeah.
At least allow the VAR referees, the video assistant referees, to... it's like MLS soccer I just did there, the VARs, at least allow them to use their common sense as well. Because anyone could look at that and go, yeah, that hit his top of his arm, but that didn't affect the play. That's a natural position. That should be a goal. And that would have been a goal in the 100 and some years of English football up until yesterday.
Ago. Well, here, I have the post-game audio of Nuno Espirito Santo speaking with the media following the 0-0 draw. And he's very articulate, Dwayne. And the way he exteriorizes his thoughts on that issue is really interesting. And I think it's really worth it listening to it. So here you go. Nuno Espirito Santo, manager of Wolves after the 0-0 draw versus Leicester.
Nuno, your thoughts on the big talking point, obviously the goal that was then disallowed.
Look, I didn't see the images. I'm going to see it. But everybody's going to speak about this. Everybody's going to speak about this because it's a decision that we have to make, the referees. But if they see it and it's clear, there's no problem. But what was 6 months ago? Well, the question will always be made. 6 months ago, it was a goal. So this is the issue of VAR and the tempo and 2 minutes the game stop. This anxiety, we celebrate, then we wait, then the fans of Leicester celebrate a known goal. That's not the spirit of the game. So they are working on it. I'm positive about it. I hope with time everything will settle down.
But it is difficult at the moment for supporters, isn't it, to quite understand all the little nuances of what is going on.
It's very hard for them. It will take time. Everything when it's something new will take time to people to understand it and to learn and to be educated. We don't want to listen in the stadiums singing songs that are not about the game.
I thought that given you played in Armenia on...
Well, so that's his comments on the VAR aspect, and I think that was interesting. So he talks about that anxiety, that moment, that adrenaline dump that you might get from celebrating, and then the realization that, oh no, we didn't actually score, and now we got to go back, and it's 0-0, and we got a corner, and we're not ready, and someone's going to concede in the 10 seconds after a VAR goal or no goal this year. And I guess Nuno, the way he explains it, makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, spirit of the game. And that is a term you're going to hear over and over again. Is VAR speaking to the spirit of the game? And there are certain fans out there, I don't want to stereotype who they are, but they're generally younger. They're generally been brought up on an era of video replay and other sports that they watch.
Okay, millennials, I'll say it because I'm part of it, so I can. So millennials, moving on.
Yeah, well, they've been brought up on video replay, so they're not... This idea that a mistake can be made, that there's gray in a rule, is something that's hard for someone who's been brought up on video replay. They're North American millennials, too, is what it comes down to, and that's where we are. It's hard for people to wrap their head around. Well, but it was a millimeter offside. Yeah, but that's not what the rule was designed for. And this is where the offside thing, and, you know, we talk about this handball in the box stuff, and that's, I think, maybe I would like to see a torque of the hand rule. They constantly torque the handballs anyway, and we've talked about that to death. But, you know, we talked about this last week as well, and we brought up in our preview,
offside.
You know, offside needs to be reevaluated too, because really the spirit of the rule of offside was to avoid stuff goal hanging, to stop players from like trying to force the defense back.
It was, to me, you remember when you were playing hockey as a kid and you had that one guy staying at the other side of the rink just waiting for that one clearance of the puck? Or in soccer, when you're playing pickup soccer, you have that one guy staying in the opposition's box waiting for the ball to come to him. Yes. It's to make the rules. It's to make sure there's not the one person behind the defense waiting for the ball and being legit, because they were scoring goals like that like no tomorrow, and then they had to put the rule because it was a bit unfair and killing the magic of the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether in the modern... I'd be curious to watch a game played without offside rule, period, at a high level, just to see what it looks like nowadays. But that aside, we used to call it cherry picking. I don't know whether that's a term that was unique to where I was,
yes,
or not.
No, it was. Yeah, cherry picker. That's what we call it when we play online to this day. That's what I call it when I play outside. In French, we say Usain or Saint-Hilaire. But in English, it's cherry picker.
Yeah, so that they want to avoid that. Well, this is not avoiding cherry picking. This is giving every advantage to the defender. And to me, the attackers should be given the advantage. And I debate with this online with people all the time that say, you know, they'll argue that what would happen is the defense would drop back further, which might make the game more defensively. And that's possible. I mean, you know, in hockey, bingo card, first bingo card of the year. I'm making a hockey reference on soccer today. in hockey when they took the red line out to allow two-line passes, which we used to call them two-line passes, well, it was called two-line passes or an offside pass. Back in the day, you couldn't pass the puck from behind the blue line above the red line. They had to go lines to zone to zone anyway. When they took that out, a lot of people thought, oh, this would open the game up. But what it did is it made it easier for hockey defenses to sit back and sort of observe a little more. And they think the same thing might happen. And it might, because soccer managers are tactical. But at least to me, the spirit of the game would still be intact. And you wouldn't have results like, you know, Raheem Sterling being called offside by a fraction of a millimeter, right? Yeah. And yes, he was by the letter of the law offside, so it was a correct call by VAR standards right now. Based on that, my argument isn't that they didn't get that right, it's that maybe they shouldn't, it shouldn't be right, you know?
That millimeter didn't change anything. Like, the defender would not have picked him up if he was a millimeter further. And Raheem would not have gotten any differences in his run or his shot if it was a millimeter shorter. So, no, that's where I get it and understand it. You know, the hypothesis the margin of error that I was talking about last week, like the width of the ball, he was inside that margin of error. So, for me, in my own mind, it's not one of those offsides. I erred to my side that I took last week in our preview show.
Yeah, and look, and I said yesterday that I believe that it should be onside if any part of the attacker is even with any part of the defender. So you have to have clear distance between them. So you would still get millimeter calls, absolutely, and I would still be frustrated by those millimeter calls. But at the very least, to me, it wouldn't be taking positive play out of the game, which I believe the current rule takes positive play out of the game. If a player is, you know, a millimeter, deemed to be a millimeter touching the defender's last line, they still, like, that's Ray borderline in terms of him being too far ahead at that point. And I can accept that. I just want positive play rewarded, not negative play. And I believe the current situation is. But the point is, and I think to wrap this up, because we could have a VAR conversation all year, and we might,
remember that Let's Talk About Turf bumper? I have a feeling I'm going to have to create a VAR bumper in the very near future.
Yeah, and that's the point. That's your talking point from week one is, we're talking about it. And that isn't that's frustrating to me as a fan, because we're, in the past, those calls, yes, we talked about bad calls, but no one would have talked about Raheem Sterling's goal. That would have been, okay, you know, maybe he was offside, but yeah. It was too close. It was probably a good goal. No one's talking about the Wolves score. That's like, no one's even bringing that up. That was the right call. Hell, the Spurs against City in the Champions League quarterfinal last year, their winning goal would have been wiped off based on the rules and the interpretation right now. And if you're listening out there, and I know, because it did definitely hit the top of his arm, but the arm was tucked in, so the play was allowed to play. Under the new rules, that's no goal.
No goal, yeah. Yeah, no, so
that makes no sense.
It will be a talking point all season long, not only in the Premier League, but in other places in Europe as well, because it is now in part of the culture, and in England they're discovering it, so there will be a lot of backlash, and it already has started, and we will always keep an eye on that issue. The topic number two for Tuesdays or for Europe for today, Dwayne. Chelsea bad or United good? Both of those sentiment can be true at the same time, and that's what I think they are. Chelsea's not that they're bad, they're not that good. They got some injuries, and Frank Lampard is discovering that the Championship and the Premier League are two different leagues. Also, United might be better than we thought, so it's a little bit of both. I'm still wearing my Chelsea jersey today, but that 4-0 defeat to start the year is going to leave some traces, especially in the confidence of Tammy Abraham and a few other players. Mason Mount. Oh, poor Mason Mount, Dwayne. Jose Mourinho already destroyed the Chelsea squad on TV. Yeah, big, big defeat to start the year for my Blues.
Yeah, but the game into itself wasn't that one-sided. It wasn't really a 4-0 game. It was a game. This is what the difference was. Chelsea bad, United good. The answer is, if you are restricting that to the ability to play the counterattack, both defend and attack, then yes, the answer is United was good and Chelsea was bad. Chelsea could not defend the counter. And United's great strength under Ole, I think, is their speed and their athleticism and their ability to get on the front foot and counter. And that's, you know, kind of not how United were used to playing, seeing them play in a lot of cases. They tended to be more of a skill team back in the past when they were good. But this is not I think that's the biggest thing we have to do when we're evaluating Manchester United in any objective way, is you have to forget about Alex Ferguson. You have to forget about 99. You have to forget about the glory days. They're gone. They're done. They are not coming back anytime soon. They are one of the teams in that slog at the top and a step below the top two. So that's how you have to evaluate them, and I'm not sure people do. So within that context, yeah, they had a good game. To go out and get a 4-0 win against one of the teams that they going to need to beat for European spots is absolutely a brilliant result. They have to do that at home. Chelsea should not have lost four. I think the biggest thing that you're going to take away as a Chelsea fan is, yeah, they're the young players. He started a lot of young players.
So yeah, he did.
Christian Pulisic, but we'll talk about that later. That's a good thing. They didn't. You know, they lost 4-0 and didn't defend the counter very well. That's a bad thing. It's the first game of the year.
No Conte.
That makes that.
That's a big difference. Like, one of the best midfielders in the entire world was not playing. And one thing that's going to be interesting with Frank Lampard as manager of Chelsea, Dwayne, is transparency with the media. We're not talking about a Jose Mourinho or someone even like a Antonio Conte, or even a Sarri for that reason, that does have an ego and an agenda and do not trust the media and is using the media for either political reason or locker room reasons. When we look at Frank Lampard, he just answers questions and he is honest about his answers. He does keep things close to the vest, but he is also very transparent. When he was asked, well, no Conte, why weren't those players playing? Why was your starting 11 so young and inexperienced? And where were your big players? Like Pulisic not starting and like Conte not playing. Like, I can't carry players from the injury room to the pitch. I did what I could with what I had. Which tells me maybe Pulisic wasn't 100%, which is maybe that's one of the reasons why he hasn't started either. His form and fitness levels are not up to the beginning of a Premier League, which would be not necessarily that surprising. Look at the amount of games he played over the last 6 months. You do see a trend that comes downwards because of Borussia Dortmund's willingness to play other players that are there for the long term and not already on a loan, well, already transferred and on a loan and waiting for the summer to leave. So his form and fitness levels might not have been up to par. So that explains Pulisic. Conte was not fit to play. It's that simple. And other players too. So that explains some reason, but there's no excuses in the Premier League. You should have a deep team if you wish to compete in the Champions League, which you're going to be a part of this year. And the Premier League, it's a tough start. And Chelsea's transfer ban, this is where it's going to hurt. It's the depth of the team. There's no 25 players battling for 11 spots this year. It's 18 players, and you got to do what you got to do. And Chelsea's going to have a difficult time playing on all fronts, I believe, this year.
Yeah, look, for sure. And we mentioned that in the preview, too, that Chelsea's inability to add in January could be a major factor in this team. And by the way, if you're interested in listening to the preview, we recorded it last Friday. You can still be able to listen to it in archives if you wish to go back and hear our overall thoughts on how the season will play out. One thing I like to do, Kevin, when I'm evaluating a game is I sort of draw my own conclusions of what I think I saw, and then I like to go back and look at the advanced numbers and see if they sort of correspond with what I thought I saw. And I'm doing that right now. I'm looking at the player rankings through who scored, and who scored is my preferred ranking site out there. I think it has the best depth of information and sort of numbers and duels and stats and things like that.
And the credibility, yeah, too. I think it's really high on who scored, so I think that's worth it. Better than transfer market, let's put it that way.
Yeah, who scored rankings, to me, are even though we don't exactly know what goes into them, they do tend to reflect reality pretty well. And I look at the overall who score rankings of all the players that featured in the match. There were 28 players that featured in the match. And the top 10 are all United players. Sorry, top nine are United players. You have to go all the way down to Emerson at 10th before you get a Chelsea player that is in the ranking. Marcus Rashford was the number one ranked player in the game at 8.34 in the Who Scored ranking, and Paul Pogba right behind him at 8.28. Good game for Pogba, actually, and you should mention that.
That's
true. Has played 2 assists on the game. You know, was a factor, won 4 aerial battles. So I think that's almost as much impressive to me as the assist, because, you know, Pogba's worry is that he wants out and he's not going to put the effort in. So a good sort of a good indicator for United that he's going to put a full shift in until such time as he does get to move on, if in fact he does, although I think that they are going to try and work to create him in here. United is young too. This is one of the youngest United clubs, your teams you're going to see
almost in history. I think it's just a few months off of the youngest team ever in Manchester United's history. So
yeah, and that's the one thing. If you are a United fan, you know you're not going to be in the title chase this year. I don't think that's controversial to say. It would be, you know, maybe they've got their tail back up after a 4-0 at home. I don't know, but by and large, most United fans are realistic about their possibilities of even top four this year. So at least having some young players out there and a willingness to play those young players, I think, is something that will be exciting for them to watch. And I think Rashford, in particular, you know, he has the potential to. I look at Raheem Sterling, and maybe we'll talk about him. Maybe we talk about him a lot, so I don't know how detailed we'll go. Obviously, a hat trick in the opening game, decent start for him. I look at Rashford in much of the same way, that if you can refine him like Sterling got refined, England could have some really dangerous forward front foot attack going on moving forward. I think Rashford still has the ability to sort of not to come in and out of games, to not necessarily finish as well as you'd like all the time, but certainly he was with his 2 goals against Chelsea, you know, and high-ranking, highest-rated player in the game was right up there to go. If you want to go to the bottom, the worst-ranked players here that played the full 90, you know, you got Zuma, not exactly a stellar night for the back line. He had an absolutely atrocious 4.86 on Who Scored ranking, but you don't see them below 5 very often.
He conceded a penalty 15 minutes in the game or something. So, yeah, the guy had a terrible game. But injuries, again, for Chelsea to begin the season, which does explain as well the backline composition. This game, it was not the preferred backline. It was not the preferred starting 11 at all for Frank Lampard. Or hopefully it wasn't. If it was, well, Frank Lampard's not staying until Christmas. Well, or maybe that's the exact opposite. Remember when Roberto Di Matteo was manager of Chelsea, and they actually won the Champions League at that moment, but he was a transitional manager, a club legend, so the supporters do not necessarily criticize his move as much. He gets a little bit longer of a leash, and you do can overhaul a lineup with that type of manager, and eventually when Chelsea is ready to compete for the Premier League again, you bring in your superstar manager to finish the job. Maybe it is that period, that rebuilding time, which for a Premier League team means you're still trying to finish fifth. But we'll see. I do have a feeling that because of the transfer ban and because of Frank Lampard's history with the club, one of the reason and thinking behind bringing Frank Lampard as manager of Chelsea was to appease the mentality of the supporters and that pressure that is always on a Chelsea coach just because of history. If you stay 6 months at Chelsea, you have a long tenure. So I think that's one of the reasons why Lampard's there. But it is going to be interesting, for good or for bad. But yeah.
Fair enough. All right.
I think we should
move on. I was going to say, you'd be careful not to overanalyze single games at the start of the year.
Exactly.
There's another obvious take here, but I think we should probably move on to our final question, Kevin, which,
yep,
we're going to look at the promoted teams.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just going to put on the screens here just the results of the games this weekend. Of course, you see Liverpool 4, Norwich City 1 to start the season on a Friday night. This was a bit difficult, a game for Liverpool. For Norwich, one of the promoted teams. The other promoted team also, Sheffield United, on the road playing versus the Cherries in Bournemouth. and 1-1 draw. So not a bad result for Sheffield United and Aston Villa losing versus Tottenham. It was an entertaining game. Aston Villa actually took the lead, but a late brace by Harry, you are a wizard, Kane made Tottenham come with 3 points at home.
Yeah, look, and Spurs were clearly the better team even when Villa got the early lead there. Although I thought Villa brought a lot to the game, and I think in general, if to tackle this this topic head on, all three promoted teams have something to build off of the start of the year to varying degrees. Norwich is obviously going to feel the most hard done by, but at the same time, and I've heard a lot of commentary that backs up this opinion, you know, you draw Liverpool away on the first day of the season. Maybe you just go in and go, you know, this is an L. Let's treat it as almost an additional preseason game.
Hashtag play the kids. Play the kids, Zane. Like, okay, kids, you got one more shot at this.
Just play the style. And that's what they did. They didn't adjust their tactics. They didn't try and sit back and play in a low block and try and grind a result. They just tried to play the way they're going to play against, you know, your Brightons and your, you know, maybe Watfords if we watch that result over the weekend. Sorry for your prediction. Maybe I shouldn't tell people to listen to the.
They're slow starters. It's fine.
Yeah, and that also was a result that didn't necessarily match the score. But who Norwich is going to play against teams that are around them in that relegation zone, like their Newcastles and things like that. They're going to try and get on the front foot and create like they did in the Championship, and they did the same thing against Liverpool. And to their credit, they did create some chances and did ultimately get a goal. And if you go on Liverpool corners of the internet, which can be terrifying sometimes, but if you do go on Liverpool corners of the internet, you'll find that the Liverpool fans are a little bit frightened by how much Norwich was producing against them, and were worried what that might mean when, you know, City or Chelsea or United or Arsenal or Spurs, or I'm just going to list them all now, is in town. So there was some positive for them, but a 4-1 scoreline is hard to ignore, so that probably is, you know, if I'm ranking the results, the worst of the three over the weekend. And in Villa 3-1, as you say, again, you have to sort of look at the score general, but again, playing Spurs, a top four team anyway, in the Premier League, a tough start for them, and they absolutely showed that, you know, I don't think that they did anything in that game to back up the opinion of many that they are the best of the three. Sheffield, however, to go down to Bournemouth, and to grind out and get that late result with a club legend, a club cult hero that has been there since the League One days, scoring that equalizer late and celebrating with the fans and then all going nuts for their first game back in a long, long time. It was exactly what you like to see when those teams come up. And even though I think that they are the worst of the three teams that are coming up, they had the best result of the first weekend. But overall, Kevin, and I'll let you jump in after this, overall, I think that all three demonstrated that there's not going to be a, you know, do you remember a few years ago when Derby County got 13 points when they came up? Yeah, there's not going to be one of those this year. No. Or there's not going to be a Huddersfield of last year of this year. So that's positive. You want those teams to at least play a role and to not be like kittens with their belly showing.
Well,
and I didn't see any of that.
Lately, well, over the last couple of years, we have seen teams being promoted and having staying power. Just look at Bournemouth, West Ham, and Burnley. And those teams came up over the last 4 years and were not necessarily touted to stay, but they did. I think the way Championship teams get put through the ringer, the gauntlet of the Championship, and then the playoffs, if you haven't won or finished second, yeah, I think it does make the team competitive. I think it does show who has the best overall depth, but not just that, it shows everything. And the arms race to become a Premier League team happens in the Championship. So you see a lot of great teams battling hard, and I think they do come to the Premier League prepared, and almost sometimes more prepared than teams that have been in the Premier League for a few years, but just dwindling at the bottom of the Premier League and just surviving. We've seen over the last couple of years the Sunderlands going down and Aston Villa, but they're coming back. So those type of small, lower end of the table Premier League team are going to have a difficulty to stay there when you have team like Sheffield United coming in or Brighton staying up at the certain level. Let's quickly take a look at the marquee matchup next week, Dwayne, in match day number 2 of 38 in the Premier League, your second game in the league, and the defending champions are facing one of the title contenders this year, Man City, Tottenham Hotspurs, Saturday, August 17th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a big game for the second week only.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. It will be a great test for both there. I mean, a lot of people coming out of the first week looked at City's result and found it disheartening for the title race because, you know, Liverpool puts the marker down 4-1 the next day, and then the very next game, City's like, nah, nah, brah, we're still the champion, and throws 5 in. And yes, I'm saying that a little gleefully, but it also, I do understand from a neutral's perspective how that could be disheartening because, you know, 5-0 on the road is against a team most think is top 10 is a little bit hard to handle. So this is going to be a much better, I think, test and sort of measure of where City's strength is this year. But it's hard to see that machine not doing everything it has in the past. You know, it's 95 points or bust basically for City. They will drop points here and there is one of those drop points early. And maybe that's how you have this as a title race. And it's how it worked last year. City didn't have the best start of the year that they would have liked. Dropped a few points in the first half of the season that they probably wouldn't have normally. I mean, there was Newcastle famously beat them. Crystal Palace got some result off them as well early on last year. And that's how the title, how Liverpool was able to open up the big lead, and then City, you know, they just won 14 straight. So that was that. But yeah, Nonetheless, we'll see. And if there is going to be a title race, there's going to have a few points dropped early. And if Spurs, on the other side of it, if Spurs is going to be part of this title race, and I think that they, and maybe only they, believe that they can be, then they're going to need to put a marker down on Saturday, and it should be a hell of a game to start the season. I think this is clearly the best game of the first two weeks in terms of the matchup.
By far. No, it's going to be a great weekend, and obviously we'll be back tomorrow to talk about the Canadian Championship and to talk about, as well, the world of football with a soccer perspective. Dwayne and I have to go. We got a Two Solitude Soccer podcast recording in just a few minutes, which will be available later today for patrons only. $2 a month will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer podcast at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. And if you like what we do, you like to support us, it is the same place as well. So go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. $2 a month, of course, that tier will give you access to the Two Solitudes. $5 a month will give you access to ad-free podcasts. Because yes, if you're listening to our podcast feed, there's been more and more advertisement on the feeds, and that's what we all have to make a living. But if you would like to have ad-free podcasts, make sure you go to our Patreon page. There is an ad-free tier, and you'll get the shows almost on a regular basis, daily basis, I mean, on your Patreon feed with no ads. So until tomorrow, as always, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie, and we do wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.